Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
We talked a lot about whether or not the Browns... If the Browns are deciding between Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski, who should stay and who should go if one has to leave, I think, Garrett, at the root of this is kind of one overarching thought process, which is who do you trust to sort of nail the pick of a potential franchise quarterback? And this all leads into my thinking on, we'll get here in a second, Andrew Berry obviously talked earlier this week about whether or not he was asked point blank period, do the Browns need to rebuild? And he gave an answer as to like why he doesn't necessarily think that's the case. We'll get that here when we can. But I tend to agree with Andrew in that I don't know that you need a full rebuild to turn this entire thing around. It's why I wasn't on board with the people who call into the station or otherwise who are jumping at the opportunity to just trade Myles Garrett at the deadline. And hey, get as many draft picks as you can, whatever. I want Myles Garrett here as part of the solution for this team. I don't think he's part of the problem. It is the NFL. You see teams turn it around pretty quickly. At the root of that, though, is you often have to nail the quarterback spot. And so I do think, like, as we talk about who should stay or who should go, I think it comes down to who you trust more to find and identify the quarterback that is right for this team, most likely via the draft next April.
Here's a problem. Let me pull this up. I pulled this up. And you, when you look at the NFL quarterbacks that are free agents, right? You can take a look and say, okay, well, what is your path, right? What is your path to getting better? So let's take a look at quarterbacks, right? The top quarterback is, in terms of free agents, is a guy that's probably on your team right now, Jameis Winston. Sam Darnold will be a free agent next year. Maybe he's playing.
Russell Wilson is a
guy who is out here. Joe Flacco is another guy. But heck, Anthony Richardson.
Justin Fields.
So you take a look at that quarterback room and the free agent quarterbacks, which by the way, that never really truly really works out too well, because if a quarterback is worth anything, they're usually on a roster. That's how important they are. You take a look at the quarterbacks that you have in the draft. A lot of these draft prognosticators are saying this isn't a great quarterback draft. There's Quinn Ewers, there's Carson Beck, there's Shedeur Sanders, there's Cam Ward.
And I'll say this real quick. I think Shedeur is probably the best of the class. But the problem with that, Garrett, is it's Cleveland, man. Like we're going to have an Odell Beckham Jr. 2.0.
Yeah, yeah.
The second things go wrong, his dad is going to be the first person trying to get him out of Cleveland.
Hey, I'm going to tell you this, man. And I said this, and people looked at me like I was crazy. And I want to say there's a huge difference. There's a huge difference between race and culture. culture is something that is, you know, it's your ideology. It's how you view the world and see the world. And Shador Sanders, he's a flashy dude. Shador Sanders, his father is prime. His father's been outspoken. He's been talking about it. Hey, listen, we know how we feel about fathers saying anything. you can't show nobody is open. Come on, bro. You got to think about this and think about the polarization of the quarterback position. This doesn't just happen when it came to Deshaun Watson. Baker was polarizing.
Yeah.
Johnny Manziel was polarizing.
We all wanted him to succeed.
You got a system of people that have been polarizing all the way back to 1999. So my thing is, we've been some believe that we feel like we've been in a Browns community civil war for the last 6 to 7 years. And are you going to get back into that? Because listen, Shador Sanders, I think he's one of the best two quarterbacks. To me, him and Cam Ward are the best individuals. They're the best passers in this draft. But the problem is they play a style of football that is similar to Deshaun Watson.
This was Andrew Berry's comments on whether or not the team needs to blow it all up and rebuild, or they can kind of stay the course here.
I'd say two things. Like, in terms of the long-term planning, again, that's probably a better postseason discussion. You know, I think one of the beauties of the NFL is, you know, it's not like baseball. It's not like basketball, where at times you may need these like half-decade-long, you know, pivots or rebuilds. You know, I think you see it every year, you know, with teams. Just the margins are so thin. And then honestly, with just the way that our sports works with player procurement, it's not like we're drafting a 16-year-old kid who's, you know, got to play 8 years in the minors before he comes and produces or something along those lines. So, you know, no, I think generally you don't necessarily have to see those pivots in our sport.
I think he's right. Like, I don't think you have to tear it all down in football to find yourself on the other side, having success, making the playoffs. I look at the Commanders as a perfect example of this, right? Like, Commanders finally got out from underneath Daniel Snyder. They finally drafted the right quarterback, and all of a sudden, They're the darlings of the NFL, right? Like 7-2, leading their division, have a chance to make the playoffs, and they're this new exciting thing, new exciting kids on the block. New quarterbacks are always going to spur hope within a fan base that this is finally the guy. And so, and that's why I think this is like the root of the question of, you know, who stays and who goes. Like, who do you trust the most to find that quarterback? Because, gee, like, the easiest path forward for this team is drafting a quarterback, getting the right quarterback, and you can sell that to the fans, and that can instantly turn your franchise around, no matter what your cap situation looks like with the Deshaun Watson contract and otherwise. But the problem is, I know there's a lot of people out there who are going to call in right now, tweet us, whatever. They're going to say, I don't know if I trust Andrew Berry to make that pick. And they're going to say they don't even know if they trust the organization to make that pick, because the only quarterback they've hit on was Baker, and then they let him go.
Or they don't know if that quarterback is in the draft. Some years it ain't a great quarterback draft. Think about a couple years ago when it was Malik, what is his name? I forgot. They drafted Malik Willis. Like, maybe it's just not one of those drafts. And one of the worst things that you can do is
talk yourself into a guy.
Talk yourself into somebody because you want to splash. Now, look.
Well, so then that brings up the question, like, do you tank for another year and wait for Arch Manning? But then it's like, then you're wasting another year of Myles Garrett. Then you're wasting another year of Denzel Ward. Then you're wasting another year of God only knows who else on this roster.
And let me we'll throw this out here. Andrew Berry, of course, is going to say that because he's a guy who is putting this stuff together. Every single year, the Cleveland Browns got this thing where we believe in we like our room. You still like your receivers, Andrew? You still like them? A couple years ago, you just punted on the season and didn't have D tackles. He just said, "Nah, we're gonna have D tackles off the street." You don't need D tackles, linebackers. Think about this: every year they get a retread middle linebacker. Started with B.J. Goodson.
Then they got what a callback.
Then they got Anthony Walker.
What a callback.
Anthony Walker. After that, then they got
Jordan Hicks.
Jordan Hicks,
who hasn't played in like 4 weeks, so 3 weeks, whatever it is.
You get these same archetypes of middle linebackers.
Now they do have JOK. They did hit on that pick. That's an Andrew Berry pick he's hit on for sure.
But that you got one.
Yeah.
And what happens when one goes down? You're in trouble. Now, They've done the same. Now think about this. This is a pattern. You do that at middle linebacker. You've done that at defensive end. Hour one, we talked about the veterans opposite of Myles Garrett that they keep bringing in, right? 1 year, 2 year deals.
They've done it at wide receiver.
They've done it at wide receiver. 1 year guy that somebody, Jerry Jeudy, that didn't really pan out to be what he was.
And he's right now, like, he's your wide receiver one going into the next year.
Anthony Schwartz over Amara St. Brown.
Yeah, that one's.
David Bell. Like, you got guys. If David Bell was slow in the Big Ten, he was slow at Purdue. Like, think about this.
There's another question there, too, G, because it's like they haven't developed wide receivers either. And then it's like you did all these offensive coaching changes, but Chad O'Shea kept his job. And I'm not trying to like call for people's jobs or anything like that, but it's just weird that the one position that's been that's eluded you these years and you can't seem to develop, like, what? But you make all these other changes?
I need to know, too, because I believe Kevin Stefanski. I believe Kevin Stefanski calls his own plays, right? Or hires his own staff. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I think he does have the power to do at least that, even though I think he was maybe forced to change offensive coordinators.
His run game coordinator. People talk about the run game.
You know who that used to be, right?
Yeah, yeah. It used to be my man.
Bill Callahan.
Let's talk about the run game coordinator who they have now. Where he at? What's his name? Hold on, let me see. Where is he at? Here, let me click on this guy. Let me figure him out. Because
I honestly don't remember off the top of my head.
Nick Charlton, offensive assistant, run game specialist. He's in his.
They should let Deuce handle that, right?
I think he should. He's his first year with the Browns. First year as an NFL coach. He joined the Browns staff as an offensive assistant run game coordinator in 2024. He spent the previous two seasons as UConn's assistant head coach and offensive coordinator. They ranked 33rd in rushing, and they won three games. How do you replace Bill Callahan, one of the greatest football minds in the run game and offensive line coaches, and you bring in not a guy from the league?
And I think we all underestimated how big that impact was going to be, because clearly that hasn't worked out. And Andy Dickerson. I thought it was going to be fine, and maybe they'd take a little bit of a step back, but for them to drop off as much as they have. But so Garrett, do you think they need to blow it up? Like, do you think is that how this ends? This ends with them blowing it up? There's no path forward where they draft the right quarterback and they can kind of figure this thing out over the next couple of years?
What I'm saying is they got a bunch of stuff wrong. And it ain't going to take one quarterback in a down draft that's going to get this team. Because, listen, we haven't even got to left tackle yet. We ain't even got to receivers and left tackle. We ain't even talked about that. So, Andrew Berry, I would love to see this roster that you're talking about that only needs a quarterback, because I see a lot of holes. And not very many draft picks.
It's not going to be easy to navigate. I tend to believe that they can find a way through it. Garrett thinks at some point they're just going to have to own the fact that they have to blow this thing up because they got the Deshaun Watson situation wrong. And I also want to open up Twitter reactions brought to you by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Ken Carman chiming in from home, very firmly against the matching pajamas at the holidays, G. Bush. So,
Now, here's the thing. We talked about the, matching all that good stuff, but if Rosie would have wanted me to do it, I might have actually rethought it,
I'm guessing Ken
there is a difference there.
We said that, like, when you have the kids, you have the family, it's different. I'm guessing Ken is saying, like, no matter who is pitching this idea, he's out.
We know Liz.
Yeah, you say that. We know
Liz. That's not a thing. He's signing that peace treaty.
I mean, there are things you put out in public
that you
do
just
behind.
He's definitely not putting it on the Christmas.
I'm just saying. Sometimes you say you're going to do one thing and then you do the other.
Reckless speculation.
We go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline for our first guest of the day. He covers the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Cavs podcast. He's a colleague of ours here at the station. And I don't know if he's into wearing the matching Christmas pajamas or not, but Danny Cunningham joining us on the show. Danny, will you accept wearing matching Christmas pajamas?
I most certainly am not into that. That is not a thing that I look to do every Christmas time. I see Christmas cards where people have that. I've never understood it. It's not for me.
I like
Will that,
that
change
man.
One day when you have kids?
I mean, maybe. I can't predict the future, but like as of now, I don't see that happening. But I can't be like, I guess never say never, but I don't anticipate that being my life.
All right, we'll revisit this in like 5-6 years, whenever. We'll get.
Or you'll just get the postcard in the mail. Like, I ain't even. He didn't switch sides on us. Speaking of switching sides, man. Cavs get an opportunity to play the Golden State Warriors, and for a while the Cavs and the Warriors had their little back and forth or whatever. I think that vitriol is gone, and that ship has sailed a little bit. You know, my partner over here, Spencer, likes to say that this might be the first marquee game that could really get a lot of eyes that'll really, you know, increase what the Cavs are doing, and people will tune in a little more, seeing that it is the Warriors and they have a great record. What are your thoughts? Do you think that the Cavs have already gotten a signature win this year, or is this the first opportunity to do so?
I think you can look at that Knicks game a couple weeks ago and say that's probably the first signature win that they had, because there is not nearly as much history between the Cavs and Knicks as there is with the Cavs and Warriors, but there is, you know, postseason history. The Knicks are an Eastern Conference rival, a team that I would anticipate the Cavs being battling with for seeding at the end of the year. So I would say that Knicks win probably is a signature win, but this is a really big opportunity for the Cavs, because you look at these two teams. Cavs obviously have the best record in basketball at 9-0, but the Warriors are 7-1. They're 5-0 on the road. They're coming off a win over the Boston Celtics. They're in a three-game stretch here where they play Boston on Wednesday, they play the Cavs tonight, and then later this weekend they go to Oklahoma City and play the Thunder. Like, there's not a more difficult three-game stretch in the NBA right now than what the Warriors have. But if the Cavs win this game and move to 10-0, I think even more eyes will be opened than already are. And I also think that it gives the Cavs a real opportunity to start thinking about going 14-15-0, because after this, they play Brooklyn tomorrow, and then they play Chicago on Monday. Wednesday, they've got Philly, but Philly's probably going to be without Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey for that game. This is the most difficult game the Cavs have for about another week. So not only is this an opportunity to open some eyes nationally that might not already be opened, but it's an opportunity to really extend this win streak pretty far.
You mentioned the national sort of perception of this Cavaliers team, and it's obvious that people are starting to pay more attention and take the Cavs seriously, and a win like tonight potentially maybe helps that even further. And people enter every season with expectations, from the fan base to people in the media and otherwise. At what point, if the Cavs kind of continue this run, and even if it's not an undefeated run, even if they get like a loss or two along the way here leading into December, at what point do you think that should the start of the season should alter expectations that people might have for the Cavs to maybe raise that bar?
I think we're already there. And I guess it kind of depends, Spencer, on what you thought the expectations for this team were going into the season. I personally was in the party that this year cannot be ruled a success unless the Cavs make the Eastern Conference Finals.
I'm with you.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Yeah. I feel even better about that right now. Like, it's a team that I expect to be competitive in the Eastern Conference Finals. And right now, and I know that the postseason doesn't start today. It's November 12th or whatever date today is. November 9th, whatever.
8th.
8th, there we go. Sorry.
Yeah!
I know that doesn't start today. I know there's a really long way to go. But there's not another team in the Eastern Conference, aside from Boston, that I look at and say the Cavs could lose that series right now. And there's a long way to go, but this looks like one of the best teams in the NBA. And if you just want to go to, I think one of the things that's really interesting is the Cavs were, their win total was 48.5 before the season at all the major sports books. And that's up to 53.5 right now. So that tells me that all the books are buying into this team too. And you go look at their odds as they were plus money. They were second behind Milwaukee to win the Central Division. They're like minus 300 to do so right now. Their odds have really jumped to win the Eastern Conference. Like, I think a lot of people are believing in this team. And there's no reason not to. Like, this is a team that should go on a really deep playoff run because they're legitimately good.
Well, I will say this. The thing that's most impressive to me has been what I've seen from Evan Mobley. You know, coach talks about, you know, him getting the ball going with it, him being able to initiate offense, create offense, and just being more aggressive. You know, what have you seen in the maturation of Evan Mobley, and can he continue on his trajectory as we get through the rest of the season and playing in bigger games?
That aggressiveness is exactly what I think Cavs fans should be thrilled to see from Evan so far. And take Wednesday night against New Orleans, for example. I don't think Evan had a very good game. It was the first time he fouled out in his career. I don't think all of those fouls were the best calls. And I think Donovan Mitchell does have a gripe about the way they've been officiated so far. But Evan finished, he took, I think he was 7 of 16. It was not a great night for him offensively. But I think that speaks to him being aggressive, because last year, Evan Mobley only had 4 games where he took 16 or more shots. And even if it's an off night, I think him taking that many shots is very important for how the Cavs are offensively. And I think the Cavs realize for them to get to where they want to go, which is very deep into the playoffs, eventually this needs to be a team that championship is the aspiration for. And maybe that's this year. They need Evan Mobley to be really good offensively. And the only way he gets really good offensively is if he continues to be aggressive the way that he has. So I think that's been one of the most positive things that we have seen about this team in the first 9 games. And I think that is the most important thing to keep going the rest of the season.
Danny Cunningham joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, Locked On Cavs, Cleveland Magazine, one of our colleagues here at 92.3 The Fan. Since we're on the subject of Evan Mobley, I know, Danny, that a lot has been said about Kenny Atkinson's ability to help him take this next step of his game. Are we giving enough credit, though, to Evan himself for the fact that he's kind of embraced this new role and is probably doing a lot of learning on the fly to accelerate his game to the level we thought he could?
Probably not, and I think a lot of it goes into what he did this offseason, because I think with that this new aggressive mindset that Evan has showcased, I think a big part of that is because he did put in a lot of work this offseason. He just, like, looks different physically, right? He put on muscle. He looks like a stronger guy. And I think that those things very much have an impact on his aggressive mindset that we've seen. And, listen, his jump shot, I think, looks better than it ever has before. And I think Evan Mobley deserves credit for that. I think Kenny Atkinson does deserve a lot of credit, too, though. And I think that has been the correct thing to do, because he's been putting Evan in positions to be more aggressive. I think that he has tapped into that mindset for Evan, and he's made sure that he's able to be aggressive. He's made sure that he's getting to the basket. And watch when Evan does something really good on offense, whether it's a drive to the basket, whether it's a three-pointer, watch Kenny Atkinson's reaction, because his reaction, I think, is a little bit different when Evan does something really good versus when Donovan or Darius does something really good, just because I think everybody knows how important Evan is to the success of this team.
When you look at it, you know, right now Ty Jerome is another guy coming off the bench that's been a spark plug, been playing very well. Isaac Okoro shot the ball well and given some time. Caris LeVert is shooting the ball well as well. You know, what have you seen from the bench group, and why have they been so successful? Especially you look at the other games, especially in New Orleans, some of the other games in Milwaukee, where you get those guys and they're able to come in on the road when the Cavs get down. They're able to give them that punch and that little spark to get them over the top.
I think they've been successful for a number of reasons. And one of them is I think that they're allowed to play a little bit more. I think they're allowed to play a little bit freer than they were last year. And I know we only saw Ty Jerome for 15 minutes all of last season before he really messed up that ankle pretty good and had to miss the rest of the year. But he's somebody that I wasn't necessarily counting on to be a big part of this Cavs team this year. He's been, I think, the most pleasant surprise of guys that are not part of the core four throughout this season with what he was able to do. Like, the Cavs do not win that game against the Pelicans on Wednesday night without Ty Jerome having the night that he had. Caris LeVert has been awesome. And I think part of it is the bench is playing more minutes than it has in the past. Right now, go back to that game I mentioned in New York like a week and a half ago. The Cavs might win that game under J.B. Bickerstaff last year, but if they do, Donovan Mitchell would have played like 41 or 42 minutes in a game at the end of October. Instead, Donovan Mitchell played like 33 minutes in that game, and the Cavs are able to rely on other guys. Right now, they only have two players averaging 30 minutes or more. It's Jared Allen and it's Donovan Mitchell. That's it, and they're like right at 30. That, I think, is a big difference from what this team has been in years past, where JB really, really, really heavily relied on starters. I think not relying on the starters as much has given the bench players confidence. And part of it is, too, like Caris LeVert is shooting 56% from three right now. As much as I like Caris LeVert and I think Caris LeVert's a really good basketball player, that's not going to keep up. I promise that number is going to go down, so that is part of it. But overall, the bench has been really good, and I think that the fact that Kenny Atkinson probably trusts them a little bit more than the previous coaching regime did is a big boost for that group.
As the Cavs are on this win streak, and it's obviously taken the league by storm, everyone's obviously noticing them now. I've seen some people, though, complaining about the fact that we still don't really see the Cavs being featured more on the primetime nationally televised games. Is that something you think could change schedule-wise if they continue winning the way that they are, that they maybe move some of their games to some of those prime spots?
Yeah, I absolutely do. As we get later into the season, if this continues up, I don't understand for the life of me why that Lakers game was not a nationally televised game. Every single time
they put like 20 LeBron, Lakers games a year on national TV, but they couldn't put that one. It made no sense.
Right. Like they picked the Celtics Pacers game, which I get. It's a rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals, but LeBron only has so many opportunities left in Cleveland to play games. The Lakers had a lot of excitement around them this offseason. They always do because they're the Lakers. Every single time that happens, that game should be on national TV. I don't understand it. Obviously, nobody could predict that the Cavs would start off 9-0. But tonight's game not being nationally televised, where you've got two teams that are combined 16-1 facing off against each other, just it does feel like a missed opportunity. I do think that we will see this team flex into some nationally televised games throughout the rest of the season if they continue playing great basketball. I don't know when that can start happening. I'm not super familiar with the league's TV rules. I know everyone's more familiar with how the NFL works, how Sunday night games can be flexed and all that. I'm not super familiar with how that works in the NBA. I know it can happen, and I would expect that it does happen for the Cavs.
At Real D Cunningham on Twitter, Danny Cunningham joining us on the show. Some great stuff in regards to the Cleveland Cavaliers. He covers the Cleveland Cavaliers for Locked On Cavs, part of our team here at 92 The Fan, and of course Cleveland Magazine. Danny, always appreciate the time, my man, and enjoy the game tonight.
You got it, guys. Have a good one.
We may actually circle back to Ohio State a little bit later in the show here, but coming up, age is just a number unless you're 35. We also have Leroy Horde set to join us in about 15 minutes from now. Real quick, though, we obviously were just talking to Danny Cunningham. I just was going to say, G. Bush, like, what is it going to take for the Cavs to get some more nationally televised games, my man? Like, we do this every year, and I get it. It's like Cleveland's the forgotten sort of city, and it kind of gets annoying because we all yell and scream from the mountaintops about why they should be on TV more. But it does feel like that tide is kind of turning a little bit, given how they've started this season. Like, at some point, they're just going to have to accept they got to put them on TV.
The more you talk about it, the least they put you on.
That's the rule of thumb for this.
It's like dating. You cannot care. It's the illusion.
Then we'll end this conversation very quickly.
The illusion of action. Like, you can't work your way onto national TV. You have to just be like, listen, we're good. And we beat everybody. So you're going to eventually have to put us on. And if you do, it really doesn't matter because we're still going to be good when we do play on national TV. So you can put us on now or later, but it's going to happen.
Eventually. It's an inevitability, essentially. But yeah, tonight would feel like a game that they would put on. But I think you're right. If you win, that's another reason why I think tonight's a statement win. You beat Golden State. National picture, they start to take you a little more seriously. Garrett, what do you think is the worst age that you could ever possibly be? Just in terms of like life circumstances, body, healing, all these different things. Just take a wild guess. What do you think it would be?
Anything under the age of one. I mean, you can't control your bowels. You can't communicate. Everything is new. These noises are crazy. There's all this stimuli. You can't sleep well at night. You got to cry just to get some
food.
See,
but you got somebody who does all that stuff for you. You don't have to wipe your own ass when you're under one.
But that's devastating, though. Can you imagine just sitting in that, like, just posted up? Like, that has to, like.
My son tends to not care. He needs a diaper change. He'll be off in the corner playing. But we're like, hey, let's go change your diaper. And he yells back at me, no.
It's,
I don't know.
It's the ignorance is bliss, like, you know. But I guess if you take out those child years, I think the worst age to be in this country is...
It's got to be in like your 80s or something, right? Nah, like when you're that old?
I think it's...
Then it's like people taking care of you for the opposite reason.
I think it's when you get out of college, and usually from the ages of 20... I want to say from 23 to 28 is terrible in this country.
You got
to
realize you're in the real world now.
Go ahead.
Tom Hanks had a very interesting response to that question.
Was there an age where you're like, damn it, I'm good with this. Take me right here. Take me back here.
No. You know, look, I'm 68 years old. The hardest for us was when we were playing 35. That time where your metabolism stops, gravity starts tearing you down, your bones start wearing off. You stand differently. I think I'm in better shape now.
You look great. I was going to tell you that.
Because
you look good.
Why? Because my kids are grown up, I'm getting decent exercise, and I can eat right. You can't do that when you're 35. Life is such a burden, dude. I'm just doing what my 68 years old type 2 diabetes, just maintaining the temple, baby. That's all I'm trying to do.
Maintain the temple. That's it.
Audio courtesy of Entertainment Tonight. I can see what he's saying, especially when I have a child at home. Like, I'm just eating a lot of the garbage that my kid's eating. Like, I do the whole dad tax thing. I always take one of the cookies out of the little cookie bag. It is a lot harder at this stage of my life with four different jobs that I have, going home and taking care of a child's another job. You got a wife to try to make sure you're keeping that relationship going. Like, It can be a cumbersome thing at 33 even. So I can see what he's saying, but I don't envision that at 35. Like, I'm going to think that's the worst possible age I can be. I tend to think it's going to be something when I'm like in my 80s and I need somebody to like wheelchair me around and I just can't do anything for myself anymore.
You know what? He's at an age where he can enjoy grandchildren. He doesn't really have to worry about money. He's cool. Don't have that many responsibilities. Not taking care of kids. I think now it would be worse because now kids who come out of college, they come out of college in debt. They come out and they chances are they won't do anything that they thought they were going to do. They're going to work in other jobs. Their wages are less than what their parents make. They're probably going to own houses later in life. They're going to wait to have children because they can't afford it.
I guess the original question he was asked was like, is there an age you want to go back to?
Right.
And he said no, but... I guess that age, to your point, and I do think you're onto something here. Like when you're first out of college, it sucks because you have no semblance of like paying bills and all these different things that are coming your way.
You're
when
just
you're
poor.
When your loans are going to start, you're trying to like fend for yourself for the first time. That does suck, especially if you like don't have a job lined up immediately after college. It almost feels like the time you'd want to go back to like is college. Like
hey, just hey, put college me in boys.
Those. Just put me in those
not
4 years.
Not everybody goes to college.
That is true.
Not everybody has that. Same.
That is true.
I mean, you had to listen. You had real life to deal with.
That's right.
Like,
so what age would you go back to if you could go back?
I'm at it, man. I'm enjoying life right now. Let's just Let's live for the moment.
I guess that's another reason why I can't say 35. Like what like he said is like the worst age because
but I get
I'm
where
enjoying
he's going.
The parent well, experience. Age, like it, I, the joy of like my child growing
right
every day.
Right now with six children, so that's probably my own fault there. But we are just on the run, right? Like it's constantly football season. And we played our last game on Sunday against Ken's team down in the Horseshoe.
Yeah.
An amazing experience.
You won, right?
And guess where we were Monday night? We were at the next sports practice. Like it... There was no time to stop there. So there's that aspect of like you're always busy, but man.
But when you're distracted by things that you enjoy,
when I get a chance to stop and reflect on those things that we spend our days being too busy with, they're pretty awesome.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. Like I got jobs that I like. I have a child that I enjoy taking care of every day when I come home. Some days are harder than others, of course. That's any family situation.
And Garrett's got family pictures to take.
Yeah, he's got Christmas card pictures.
I would probably say if I got a chance to go back to high school was fun. Like just
so long as you didn't peak in high school. That's the key. You can't peak in high school.
No, I didn't peak in high school.
I mean, look at you.
I'm G. Bush now.
I have watched highlights of McKinley versus Maslin, and there were some peak moments there, I think, for you, Garrett. Yeah. I saw you like three tackles for a loss in one series. It was
listen, shout out to you guys in their old footage. You know what's so funny is that when you get in this industry – like people will Google, did G. Bush ever play anything? That's how long I've been doing this more than I've ever done anything else. Like, which is wild.
By the way, I'm not the only one who like the people that peaked in high school. You get a kick out of like seeing what they've done, like miserable in their lives.
That's the only reason I still have a Facebook account.
Are you serious?
I go back to your high school reunion. I didn't go to mine, but
the Lord is working with me on that. I'm not supposed to. I'm not bitter or anything. Just I wish everybody the best of luck.
Karma. It always comes back to bite you. Right.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.